Following are comments on Ben Jonson's Volpone, or The Fox, Act 4. Act 4, Scene 1. I told you, sir, it was a plot. Sir Politic Whitby is again holding forth for the alleged benefit of the English traveler Peregrine. In Act 4, Scene 1, Sir Politic Whitby insists that the whole mountebank scene a while back was some sort of plot to entrap him. Why he thinks that is anybody's guess, but still he says, quote-unquote, I told you, sir, it was a plot. You see what observation is. Act 4, Scene 1, Line 102. As always, Sir Paul is mighty pleased with himself for thinking as he does. The world revolves around him. Sir Paul also has a notion that Italians are very jealous about their culture and ruthless in exposing those who don't understand it. Might this be projection on his part, this Englishman who desperately wants to be considered an insider in another people's culture? He boasts to Peregrine that, quote-unquote, within the first week of my landing here, all took me for a citizen of Venice. Act 4, Scene 1, Lines 37 through 38. Based on everything we know about Sir Paul, that hardly seems likely. Master Whitby fancies that he has a knack for getting by, and he details his three big beautiful ideas for making a basket of ducats from Venice. The first is to sell the Venetian state large quantities of red herrings. The second is to advise the state that it should restrict possession of common tinderboxes to Venetians of known loyalty. Why, he says, anyone could walk into the city's arsenal and blow the whole bundle of munitions sky high. Even those approved to carry these items, he says, should only be allowed to possess them, quote-unquote, at such a bigness as might not lurk in pockets. Act 4, Scene 1, Lines 98 through 99. Brilliant, and redolent perhaps, as the Methuen New Mermaids editor points out, of the November 1605 gunpowder plot in England that almost resulted in the assassination of King James I and the entire Parliament. Ben Jonson, as the editor says, almost found himself accused of being involved with the conspirators, so there is a bit of auteur-like self-reference on Jonson's part at this moment in the play. Sir Paul's third idea is even sillier. He has, he tells Peregrine, devised a scheme whereby ships entering Venice can be tested for plague by means of onions and bellows. If only he had his notebook so he could show the plans to the incredulous Peregrine. As for Sir Paul's personal diary, he's eager to show that clever account to his English acquaintance Peregrine. As the latter reads an itemized section of the diary, its contents are no more than references to unconnected trivialities, events of the day, and no more. Sir Paul evidently writes down absolutely everything that occurs to him and everything that happens to him. This seems consistent with his narcissism, so no surprises there. Act 4, Scene 2. This cannot be endured by any patience. Lady Whitby is set upon catching Sir Politic Whitby in the act of courting a prostitute, and mistakes Peregrine for his lover. In Act 4, Scene 2, Sir Paul begins by praising his approaching wife as a woman he would boldly compare for beauty and fashion with any other, but she is on a mission to humiliate him based on the false claim made by Mosca in Act 3, Scene 5, that he has been seen together with a Venetian courtesan in a gondola. Unable or unwilling to view the scene before her accurately, Lady Whitby launches into poor Peregrine, calling him, quote-unquote, your light land siren here, your sporus, your hermaphrodite. Act 4, Scene 2, Lines 47 through 48. Sir Paul makes a feeble attempt to rescue Peregrine, but the lady continues to hurl abuse at him as, quote-unquote, a lewd harlot, a base fricatrice, a female devil in a male outside. Act 4, Scene 2, Lines 55 through 56. This is too much even for the amiable Peregrine to tolerate, so he takes up his own defense, attacking her fair complexion with the catty observation, quote unquote, "Your nose inclines that side that's next the sun to the queen apple." Act 4, Scene 2, lines 72 through 73. Lady Woodby is duly scandalized, saying, quote unquote, "This cannot be endured by any patience." Act 4, Scene 2, line 74. No matter that she started the whole fracas. Act 4, Scene 3. "Pray you, sir, use me." Lady Woodby is cured of her error in perception by Mosca, but continues to embarrass herself. In Act 4, Scene 3, Lady Woodby comes to Mosca and presents Peregrine to him with another dose of insults. Mosca cures her present misperception with another, thanks to his lie about Celia. The latter is, in fact, the prostitute who was seen with Sir Paul, says he, and she is, quote-unquote, "apprehended now before the Senate." Act 4, Scene 3, lines 7 through 8. Lady Woodby is deeply embarrassed by her mistake, but loses no time in compromising her integrity and generally making an ass of herself. She says to Peregrine, quote-unquote, "Pray you, sir, use me in faith. The more you use me, the more I shall conceive you have forgot our quarrel." Act 4, Scene 3, lines 17 through 19. The sexual connotations of a phrase like "use me" are impossible to miss, unless, of course, one is the oafish much-talker Lady Woodby. The connotation is not, however, lost on Peregrine, who finally takes offense at this ridiculous person's slights and, he thinks, come-hitherings. Or rather, he takes offense at what he construes as Sir Paul's attempt to prostitute his wife to him. Quote unquote, "Sir Politic would be? No, Sir Politic Baud. To bring me thus acquainted with his wife." Act 4, Scene 3, lines 20 through 21. "If that's how it is," he says, he will work up a quote-unquote counterplot to put this immoral man to the test. Act 4, Scene 3, line 24. "It isn't easy to make an enemy of someone like Peregrine, but the absurd and obnoxious Sir Paul and his lady have done it. Perhaps we can even say that a little of Sir Paul's conspiracy theory addiction has rubbed off on Peregrine since he uses the term counterplot. But more likely, the young man uses the term with ironic humor." Act 4, Scene 4. "Mercury, sit upon your thundering tongue. The legal battle is about to begin, and Mosca has all his false witness ducks lined up in a liar's row, with Valtore as counsel leading the charge." In Act 4, Scene 4, Mosca's plan to condemn the titular plaintiffs Bonario and Celia in court and thereby protect Volpone, is to line up Corvino, Corbaccio, and Voltore, the latter as counsel for the defense, on his and Volpone's side, with Lady Woodby waiting in the wings as yet another witness to the misdeeds they will allege against Bonario and Celia, no matter the facts. Mosca cheers on Voltore the attorney with, quote-unquote, "Mercury, sit upon your thundering tongue, or the French Hercules, and make your language as conquering as his club, to beat along, as with a tempest, flat our adversaries." Act 4, Scene 4, lines 21 through 24. This is lawyering with a premonitory nod to certain modern advocates. "Never admit wrong, always attack the other side, preferably with some crime worse than the one your client allegedly committed." Act 4, Scene 5. "This woman, please your fatherhoods, is a whore." In court, Valtore counter-accuses the plaintiffs, Bonario and Celia, in the most vicious and slanderous terms. In Act 4, Scene 5, the avvocatori don't know what to make of the case getting underway before them. But Valtore wastes no time. The first order of business is to settle the issue of Volpone's absence from court. Valtore and Mosca do their best, but the avvocatori command that he be fetched. In the meantime, Valtore assails Celia as, quote-unquote, known a close adulteress, and Benario as a, quote-unquote, lascivious youth who has been, quote-unquote, known and taken in the act of adultery with Celia. Act 4, Scene 5, lines 37 through 39. Corvino he paints as a patient, put-upon husband, and Corbaccio a heartbroken father driven to disinherit Benario once he realizes what the young man has done and how ungrateful he is to his father. Valtore further accuses Benario of showing up at Volpone's home in the expectation of murdering Corbaccio. Enraged when that worthy could not be found, says Valtore, Benario dragged Volpone from his bed and conspired with Celia to accuse him, a dying man, of attempting to rape Celia. Corbaccio steps up to lie in asseveration of this lurid account, and so does Corvino, slandering his helpless wife. Quote unquote, "This woman, please your fatherhoods, is a whore, of most hot exercise, more than a partridge." Act 4, Scene 5, lines 116 through 117. Faced with such savage persecution, Celia swoons before the court. Mosca repeats Valtore's claim that Celia has falsely accused Volpone of rape. And for one more nail in the coffin, Valtore mentions that Lady Woodby is available to tell the court that she, just as Mosca saw Celia flirting with Sir Paul beforehand, saw her committing improprieties with her wayward husband in a gondola. The Avvocatori definitely want to hear from this woman. Act 4, Scene 6. See here, grave fathers, here is the ravisher. When Volpone is carried in to play his role as an invalid, Celia and Benario are crushed under the weight of what Valtore makes of the fox's skillful performance. In Act 4, Scene 6, Celia and Benario do themselves no favors by simply being heavenly and good, as their names imply. The court begins to turn against them when Lady Woodby tells them the lurid, so-called facts about what she saw going on between Celia and Sir Paul in that accursed gondola. Things go farther south when the allegedly, quote-unquote, impotent or prostrate Volpone is carried in, and his death's door appearance seals the case as far as the Avvocatori are concerned. Valtore, pointing to the supposedly dying wreck of a man near him, plays the opportunity as skillfully as Mark Antony at Caesar's funeral, saying to the Avvocatori, quote-unquote, "See here, grave fathers, here is the ravisher, the rider on men's wives, the great impostor, the grand voluptuary." Act 4, Scene 6, lines 23 through 25. Confronted with this performance, Benario and Celia's fates are sealed. The Avvocatori have the two one-time plaintiffs led away in shame, and sentence will be rendered that very evening. The dial is set to triumph for Volpone and Mosca. The latter speaks briefly with Corvino, Corbaccio, Valtore, and Lady Woodby, and sends them all away, thinking the dial is set to triumph for them, too. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on July 1st, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the revised Methuen New Mermaids edition of 2019.